So tonight's Dharma talk will be given by a Boundless Way priest and Dharma holder, and also last year's Shuso, last year's head of practice for coming and going. We're so delighted to have him back with us again, Bob Waldinger.
Here we are, dipping in again to the wisdom of Suzuki Roshi. For some of us, it's week three of all Suzuki Roshi all the time. And for some of us, it might be day one, the first time we've encountered Zen. And what I'm struck by on the eve of this new era in politics is how brave Suzuki Roshi was. He was Japanese, and he immigrated to the United States in 1959. 15 years before that, we were herding Japanese Americans into concentration camps. But he came. He came because he had taken the Bodhisattva's vow to share this mind with all beings so that he and the world together would grow in wisdom. So he left his home, he left his culture. He taught these infinitely subtle concepts in a language that wasn't his native language. And his ideas were subversive. He was saying to us, don't believe everything you think. Reality is not what you think it is. And so if we are beginning this practice and we read Suzuki Roshi, some of his words may be opaque to the mind. They were for me. But they were, as they say, radiant to the heart. There was something in them. He would write these things, I would read them, and be puzzled, but want to read more. So tonight I'm going to read to you one of the passages that was most puzzling to me, and then talk about it. He talks about the quality of being. The purpose of Zazen is to attain the freedom of our being physically and mentally. According to Dogen Zenji, every existence is a flashing into the vast phenomenal world. Each existence is another expression of the quality of being itself. And then he goes on to write, everything is just a flashing into the vast phenomenal world. That means that the freedom of our activity and of our being, if you sit in the right manner with the right understanding, you attain the freedom of your being, even though you are just a temporal existence. Within this moment, temporal existence does not change, does not move, and is always independent from other existences. In the next moment, another existence arises. We may change to something else. Strictly speaking, there is no connection between I myself yesterday and I myself in this moment. There is no connection whatsoever. So what does he mean? Everything is just a flashing into the vast phenomenal world, and there's no connection between I myself yesterday and I myself in this moment? I was Bob yesterday. I'm Bob now. What's the big deal? But when we look deeply into the real form of the universe, all kinds of mysterious things get revealed. So we sit here and we look and we look. And when I look, I realize that the Bob that I'm so sure was here yesterday gets a little fuzzy around the edges. I'm not so sure. I can't quite remember what I had for dinner. I can't quite remember when I lay my head down on the pillow. And then we think about all that we forget in this amazing life of ours. Think about what you had for dinner on Monday night. Might be difficult to do. Think about what you had for dinner January 19th, 1 year ago. Probably impossible. One tiny element in all the things that we forget most of what we experience. And we don't even take in much of what's here. What then is this image that we carry around of ourselves that we think continues from yesterday to today, from a moment ago to now? Full of holes. Actually, psychologists have studied this in great depth, and what they find is there are some very particular things we tend to do to distort what happens to us. We tend to remember the things that are most recent. So if you have a really good day, the last day of coming and going sesshin, you're likely to remember the whole sesshin as a great sesshin. And if you have a bad day, if you're in a hell realm, well, the whole 3 weeks is likely to get painted with that hell realm. We're very suggestible. The soup had lentils tonight. But if all of you started telling me, "Oh, no, they really were beans," I might pretty quickly come to think, well, yeah, they probably were beans. We are infinitely suggestible. There's a quote from Mark Twain that I really like. He wrote, "Some of the worst things in my life never happened." All of that is to say that this picture we have of ourselves in this moment, continuing from the past into the present, is just a thought flashing in this moment. Full of holes, full of fiction, arising in this moment with knee pain, with breath, with light on the floor, with the feel of the Zabutan under me, flashing into the phenomenal world until the hard edges of the images that we have of ourselves and the world begin to get fuzzy. One of the ways this was brought home to me and how ossified my images of self get is when I went to a high school reunion a couple of years ago. I walked in, looked at all these people and said, "Where did my classmates go and how did all these old people get here?" We hold these images so tightly, and yet what Suzuki Roshi says is that if we understand that these images are just flashes of thought in each moment, and that each moment is an arising and a passing away, that there is liberation there. would our minds do this? Why would we come into the world as beings who don't see things as they are? Now, Zen isn't really much concerned with why, and so I'm not going to dwell on it. But there is one idea that I found really interesting. Dogen, Suzuki Roshi, our ancient teachers have told us for years that we do not see reality as it is. We only see each moment as it appears. And now evolutionary biologists have begun to find that in fact we evolve not to perceive reality as it is, we evolve to perceive reality as we need to survive. So it's a really helpful fiction to hold on to a self that persists through time. It allows us to get in the car and come here at the appointed time. It's a really helpful fiction that the past is knowable and that we are reliable knowers, because then we can learn from experience. But the truth that we see when we look deeply into the real form of the universe, has this other aspect. This aspect of everything just arising and passing away in each instant. No moment hindering another. So what then? How is this liberating? We find that those fixed stories that we have about ourselves, often stories conditioned by our greed and our anger and our delusion, those fixed stories start to fall away. I'm a shy person, or I always put my foot in my mouth in groups, or I've ruined my life. We each have our favorite stories that we trot out. Stories that fix and ossify experience which is constantly flowing, ever-changing, never graspable. And that's the liberation, that's the relief. But are we then just liberating ourselves individually? Are we just becoming slightly less miserable arhats, slightly more realized personal growth? No. And that's where Tori Zenji tells us to look. He says, now on each flash of thought a lotus flower blooms, and on each flower a Buddha. The light of the Tathagata appears before us, soaking into our feet. May we share this mind with all beings, so that we and the world together may grow in wisdom. Our goal is to see through these images of the fixed self and the fixed other. And as we bump into the pain of our own stories, compassion arises for ourselves and for others, because we come to know in our bones that everybody is holding these stories that limit and dampen and close down our life. Other people may be holding stories that we don't like, but in many ways ours are no less limiting. And from that compassion arises, and from that wisdom, and from that discernment, and then from all those, skillful action. And in a time when wisdom and discernment and skillful action seem in desperately short supply, there could be nothing more important than what we're doing right now, looking deeply into the real form of the universe. Thank you for being right here with me, Bodhisattvas.
So please sit comfortably, and now we have a time of discussion where if you have a question or observation, a question about the talk or about Zen, come raise your hand and we'll call on you and see where we go. Yeah.
Whenever I encounter the teaching that you just talked about, you're not the same person as you were yesterday, I get filled with fear, and it's like, wait, that means I don't exist. Like there's nothing. Like I'm just gonna go poof and just disappear in the chair. And so I push it away, but it's like, well, like, how do you get over that? It just seems self-evident that that's sort of like you're nothing, but it's like. You're like not nothing, but you're nothing, but you're not nothing.
That's a problem because I know what you're saying. I think you're noticing it is really important. I think many of us get to that place where it's suddenly this what we think of as groundlessness.
Yeah.
And that can arise with lots of fear and at the same time a certain peace.
It's the subtle difference between drowning and flying. Mm. Yeah. It's like which one, like some.
Yeah.
Well, and the feeling is like when I'm drowning, like there's something about it I'm not quite seeing correctly, and it's like I don't know what it is when I hear the same words. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes I hear them, it's like, oh wow, like I'm everything I can be, and then other times it's, oh god, I'm like,
yes.
I'm like wondering what the thing I'm not seeing is when I get the drowning feeling. I don't know.
Yeah, well, what you're noticing is the ego saying, wait, no, I gotta hold on here. That there's this pull to preserve that sense of self at all costs, and so the fear arises.
And it's one of the reasons that we say this formal practice is so important. Because in the middle of those feelings and others that can arise, the oh my God, and the I love how you describe the drowning and flying. Am I dying or am I being born? And of course the answer is yes. But our posture and our breath is something that we can actually trust. While the mind gets quite confused on this path. My teacher used to say, you have to be willing to tolerate weird mind states to do this practice. And so you're encountering them, and they're can be quite disturbing. In fact, they will be. And so to be present to the body, in the chair, feet on the ground, to the breath, is one way of sort of riding through it, of letting it come, seeing what happens. And we begin to notice that it all comes and goes. All of this human experience. Mm. Yeah.
It's just a subtle difference between being grounded in everything and like everything changes at once. It's like,
yeah.
It's like,
exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for your talk. I like how you talked about how stories we have about ourselves are evolutionarily advantageous and just like useful stories to have in day-to-day life. Screw evolutionary biology, like it's helpful. I'm David, I need that for my life. We've talked a lot
about screw evolutionary
we've talked a lot about we practice here, but then we bring this practice out into the world because being out in the world is practicing. But of course, we do still, as you said, we need these stories about ourselves to get by in the world. So in order to continue practicing with this no-self out in the world, is it just as simple as holding those stories lightly? Or is there more to that practice that we can develop?
Well, I think the holding the stories lightly includes beginner's mind, bringing beginner's mind. So at the same time that you need to know the routine getting to work and the routine of who gathers for the 9 o'clock meeting, can we bring beginner's mind to that person sitting across the table from us who we've seen 100 times, but like, oh, could we look at them with fresh eyes and look at ourselves in relation with fresh eyes? I think that's one of the things that Suzuki Roshi puts out there for us as a possibility.
So like that idea of not holding on to fixed ideas about ourselves and then just extending that to everyone that we interact with.
Well, and that's in a sense what we're practicing on the cushion. Someone who was here earlier made the wonderful comment, you know, I do this breath practice and my mind wanders away, and then I come back and I'm just at the same old place. So the same old place, you know, at work, me again, we get to look at this same old place. And this teaching is that there's no such thing as the same old place. That's the story. And we begin to look more closely and see that there's something here that we can't imagine, but we can encounter, that is full of life and infinitely creative. Mm-hmm. But it takes a lot to be still enough to stay long enough to see something more than our thought, same old, you know, whatever. Yeah.
And I'd like to add a teaching from David Reinick Roshi that he got from his teacher, which was that question to ask, what's here in this same old place? What's here that I haven't noticed before? To bring that question to every same old place you arrive at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody's comments. I found this little book on Zen and psychoanalysis, or DT. Suzuki is doing his little thing, and then Eric Fromm. And I've only gotten a few pages into it, but what is so, you know, I'm trying to be here and branch out in terms of really understanding this relative and absolute, like the lid and the box fits. Okay, is this small mind, big mind? We're all together, you know, it's all together. And so, but I really need people sitting next to me in order to have confidence in that. And that's my particular place that I'm at. But one, the little story he tells, I have not read a lot of him, so I just love the way he speaks. He says, you know, this person, I think from Japanese, from Japan, looks at a flower and looks very closely at the flower and just is in awe of the flower and sees it and keeps looking at it and comprehends it in a way that he relates to it as a living thing, as something that's changing, something that wasn't there, is there, won't be there. And the Westerner, you know, it's a more specific story, but the Westerner sees the flower, picks it. It's just gonna die, and like takes this like physical charge of it and gets analytical and thinks that it has to own it be in charge of it. And so to me, this subtle thing we're talking about is just that. It's and that everyone comes here, you know, I go out into my life and I'm just bumbling around. So it's not like I actually know what I'm doing. I'm just following something that's not in just my mind. It's in my body as well. And I'm pretty skeptical about things.
Well, you know, Joanne, I think one of the things you're talking about is how radical this is, this practice of non-doing, right? You know, you talk about the Western approach with, I'm going to pick the flower, I'm going to own it, I'm going to scientifically study it, and it's going to die. And the person just appreciates, you know, and we've all probably had that experience of like, whoa, when you've been sitting for a while and you go out and you look at, you know, anything.
Dirt.
And I think that what you're pointing to is how transformative it is to have a practice that is this doing nothing.
On that note, let's do nothing. So we'll sit for a few more breaths and then we'll begin our walking.